earth world is there not to be amazed by and to be steadied by and to cherish? Oh, my dear heart, my own dear heart, full of hesitations, questions, choice of directions, look at the world. Behold the morning glory, the meanest flower, the ragweed, the thistle. Look at the grass. You're taking enough time to do that. I had a kindergarten teacher who used to say to parents, and this was back when life was a lot simpler than it is now, that she mourned the fact that those days it didn't seem like kids had so much time to lie on their backs in the grass and watch the clouds go by anymore. I think we all need those times. Some of you know that on Fridays we put up a post on our church Facebook page with a little blurb about what's happening here on Sunday and some image that we hope says something about the sermon or the worship theme for that Sunday. Thinking about it this past Friday, I remembered an image from a cover of the New Yorker now back some years ago. It's a drawing of a businessman standing on a Manhattan sidewalk. He's wearing a suit, he's holding a briefcase, and the perspective of the illustrator is from the sidewalk looking up. And so you see this businessman with his suit and his briefcase surrounded by very tall buildings. And he's looking up, and way above, there's this little tiny patch of blue sky with a cloud in it and one bird flying way overhead. This image, people who live in New York have told me that that's what it feels like sometimes. Ah, I'm surrounded by people and buildings, and if somebody could, you know, levitate me out of here, like, you know, in Star Trek, you know, where they could energize and zoop you out of one place and put you somewhere else, that people feel that way. This image, this illustration from the New Yorker, acknowledges that in our busy and often urbanized and mechanized and manufactured world, we have this need for more, to be reminded of who we are, to feel well-rooted and at home where we are, perhaps sometimes to lie on our backs in the grass and look at the sky. And it also acknowledges the truth that each of us at least sometimes feels lost and overwhelmed, adrift and disconnected. From what you all tell me, you come to church here for at least two main reasons. For some of you, it's community, to see and be seen by other people, to make and to renew these human connections, and to reach out to those in need. For others, you tell me that you come here to touch something less tangible, but no less real. You long to drop down into a deeper place of being. You come to feel the stirrings of the Spirit, to be lifted up to that place where you can be open to the wonder and mystery of this life. If nothing else, we offer these two basic experiences: the intimacy of human contact and connection, and the ultimacy that comes with spiritual depth. Intimacy and ultimacy. If you boiled it down, it's really what faith communities are all about. And I think of these two things as two different directions: the horizontal and the vertical. The horizontal is our human connections, and the vertical is our longing to go higher or deeper, to plumb the depths of meaning and the heights of spirituality. And some of us are naturally inclined to seek more one direction than the other. If you tend towards the horizontal, then you probably can't really enter into worship here until you've talked to some friends before the service begins and greeted as many people as possible during the greeting time. Yes? And if you're more of the vertical orientation, you may long for more quiet during the prelude. And you probably look forward to the time for prayer and silence. And, of course, this is a both and not an either or. Most of us are some combination of the horizontal and the vertical. And though we may have leanings or preferences for one over the other, we should acknowledge that neither orientation is better or more important or more necessary. A healthy spirituality includes both. And I also feel the need to say that our lives, of course, are multidimensional. These axes of horizontal and vertical are just a way of thinking about these things that I hope you will find helpful and not limiting, because there's something in our Western culture that tends to drive us toward dualistic either-or thinking, and you know we don't need any more of that. A couple weeks ago, I started rereading a book by the Jungian scholar and mystic Robert Johnson called Balancing Heaven and Earth. And I borrowed today's sermon title from him. In his early years, when he was about 9 or 10 years old, I believe, Robert Johnson had a near-death experience. He was hit by a car and almost died on the operating table. "I crossed a divide there in the hospital," he writes, "and suddenly I was in a glorious world. It was pure light, gold, radiant, luminous, ecstatically happy, perfectly beautiful, purely tranquil, joy beyond bound. I wasn't the least bit interested in anything on the earthly side of the divide. I could only revel at what was before me. We have words for this side of reality, but none to describe the other side. It was all that any mystic ever promised of heaven. And I knew then that I was in possession of the greatest treasure known to humankind." The doctors managed to bring young Robert back to life, though he says that in those moments he was resisting their efforts. He wanted to stay where he was, and that experience changed him forever. Johnson says, "In the morning of that fateful day, I was a giddy kid. By midnight, I was a very old man in a boy's body." And so in the years that followed, Robert Johnson struggled to live in this world after having that experience. He says he tried to learn to live on earth with an indelible memory of heaven, but despair was his almost constant companion. But then at age 16, he caught another glimpse of heaven, he says. This time it was not a near-death experience, but one rooted in this good earth. Watching a sunrise one morning after being up all night, he saw the glorious world that he had sensed before. "I can't really say," he writes, "whether I heard, saw, smelled, tasted, or touched that sunrise. No matter, it was an antechamber of heaven, and it was my native land. It lasted for about 30 minutes of clock time, but it was eternity in the heavenly realm. Language fails me when I try to describe what I experienced." I wonder if you've ever had an experience similar to this. when for a few moments everything seemed to shine or sparkle, your eyes were opened, and you saw in a new and unexpected way the beauty and the interconnectedness of life. We do, if we're lucky, get these kinds of glimpses from time to time. Robert Johnson spent much of the rest of his life, he says, seeking a balance between these two realms. And isn't that what we are invited to do too in our lives? To find a balance between the vertical life of the Spirit and the horizontal life of loving and helping our neighbors here on earth. A healthy life, of course, is one with some balance in all kinds of things, between doing and being, between work and play, between giving and receiving. There are seasons in our lives when we need more of one rather than the other. So if you just want to come to church right now and soak it all in, you do that. And if you were inspired and energized to get involved and roll up your sleeves and help out around here, then for goodness sake, you do that too. You know, we live in a time when there is so much emphasis on doing, on being active and productive, that it can be hard to sit still and do nothing for a change. But I know I need this just about as much as I need food and water. And I suspect some of you do too. So I ask you, what is your soul longing for these days? And do you know how to be still and touch these depths that elude us if we are too busy or listening to too much noise? If you're new here, you may be wondering, what kind of church is this anyway? And if you are new, you've come at a good time because this month we're going to be exploring Unitarianism and Universalism, the two strands that came together to form our tradition. And no matter how long you've been here, I hope that you will find this helpful and inspiring. But to answer that question, what kind of church are you? I think of a banner that was hung for a while outside a church where I used to work. It was put up during a construction project, and it was a sign like many of those you see when a business is under construction, and it says, "Yes, we're open." You know, you've seen those, right? This was a little bit different. It said, "Yes, we're open, very open." And that describes us perfectly, doesn't it? We're very open as a church. We have different beliefs and theologies, and we don't think we all see things the same way, and we see this diversity as a strength and not a weakness. Some of us pray, and some of us practice Buddhist meditation, and some of us don't. Many of us, whether we would use this language or not, pray with our feet, as Abraham Heschel once said, doing things like feeding the hungry and working for racial justice and advocating for our planet in this time of climate change. This church here with two long names is the product of two progressive Protestant denominations, the Unitarians and the Universalists, who joined together 55 years ago to form Unitarian Universalism. Here in Haverhill, the Unitarians came over and joined the Universalists here in this building about 10 years before the national merger, which is why the word Universalist comes first in our name, because the Universalist Church was stronger, and hey, if it's your place, you get to call the shots, right? Unitarianism in America emerged early in the 19th century out of a controversy that took hold among New England congregational churches over the nature of God. People really fought over the question of the doctrine of the Trinity. It was a really big deal whether, as Trinitarians said, God was three in traditional language, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, or this new understanding, these folks who said, no, we believe that God is one. Universalism started in this country in the late 18th century among Christian denominations, folks who started to reject the Calvinist doctrine that said only some people were going to go to heaven. Universalism takes its name from the doctrine of universal salvation that says God's love is so big and so inclusive that nobody is beyond it. And so in coming weeks, I'll say more about these two traditions, our history and our theology, and how these traditions can inform our lives and help nourish our spirits so that we do something to help heal our world. But if in the meantime, somebody asks you, tell me about that church of yours, or what does that mean, Unitarian and Universalist, you could offer them this shorthand version of our two theologies. Unitarian, one God. Universalist, nobody left behind. One God, nobody left behind. On the cover of our order of service, a couple years ago, we started putting these words, welcoming, caring, faith, community. They describe who we are and who we strive to be, a congregation oriented towards both the horizontal and the vertical, a loving and caring spiritual community that is about helping to nourish souls so we might heal and bless our world. Because let's face it, life is a challenge and a struggle, at least some of the time. There is so much that pulls at us, so many voices that can tug at us, wanting us to listen to them, sometimes in helpful ways and sometimes not. You know this. My constant companions back here. One morning this week, my wife Tracy and I were sitting on our back porch drinking our morning tea, and I was trying to sit quietly and center myself, but not doing a very good job of it. There were these voices already racing around in my head as I was thinking about some of the things of the coming day. And maybe her timing was just good, or maybe Tracy sensed this, but she was reading something, and she said, "Can I read you something?" And I said, sure. And I don't even remember what it was, but in that moment, it was something I needed to hear. It reminded me that there is more going on than meets the eye. There is a world of peace and wholeness that I can drop down into if I have an open heart and am willing to make the time to do that. A world where I remember that there is enough time, that life is good in spite of all the evidence to the contrary, where I can sense even the morning stars singing together, the mountains and hills bursting into song, the trees clapping their hands, to use some old words. So here are these words from Mary Oliver that I hear as like a prayer. Another morning and I wake with thirst for the goodness I do not have. I walk out to the pond and all the way God has given us such beautiful lessons. Oh Lord, I was never a quick scholar, but sulked and hunched over my books past the hour and the bell. Grant me in your mercy a little more time. Love for the earth and love for you are having such a long conversation. in my heart. The invitation is to live our days on this earth open to awe and wonder and mystery, to live in both the horizontal and the vertical dimensions, to be balancing heaven and earth, letting love of this earth and love of that which is always more have a long conversation in our hearts. And you know, our world needs us to be doing this, to practice opening ourselves up as best we can in both of these directions, delighting in these gifts that we have been given, and reaching out to those we love and to those in need, blessing them and saying, "Come and go with me to that land where I'm bound." Amen.